Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Let's get to the 8 at 8. Call it the Ocho. You're listening to KILT, KILT HD2, an Odyssey station.
Here we go. One.
Rangers and Astros. Astros close out a nightmare week. Really a nightmare week. I was going to say nightmare weekend. It started out as a nightmare, but I don't ever want to relive that with what happened in Kansas City. You blow a game that you had a 3-0 lead, and then you get destroyed for two games. You get destroyed again on Friday. And that's what rock bottom feels like. Hopefully that was rock bottom, because the Astros are able to pull the plane out of a nosedive and win 9-2 and 8-5 over the Rangers this weekend. Seth, Saturday, the Ronel Blanco show again. He was nails. 7-run explosion in the 7th. Got the job done. And then on Sunday, Christian Javier, really solid and uncharacteristically efficient. I mean, usually the best version of Christian Javier in the last year or so has been a high pitch volume 5-inning guy.
Yeah.
He got you 7 innings on Sunday. And getting 13 innings combined out of Blanco and Javier in the wake of what last week did to the bullpen is maybe one of the might be the most important sort of combined two-person effort so far this year, getting all those innings in this weekend by those two guys.
Javier, when is invisible, is indeed invisible. It opens up everything else for him. And I think that's probably one of the more encouraging things. I always wondered exactly what was going to happen with Javier as people saw his pitch more and more and more, because it just there's an optical illusion element to it that maybe over time people adjust to it. And it's gone back to, no, like, as long as he's throwing it the way he's capable of throwing it, and that 15 fewer pounds that he's carrying this year seems to help with that, that they've got no answers for it. You know, you add a change up into the mix and boom, there you go.
Yeah. That's been good to see. Like the two heroes of the 2022 postseason were Jeremy Peña and Christian Javier.
Yeah.
And neither had a good 2023. And they're both going to be Astros for a while. You know, we don't know how long Alex Bregman's going to be an Astro for, and he didn't play this weekend at all. I'm guessing he'll be back. He was back with the team yesterday. He just didn't play. He was sick over the weekend. But Jeremy Peña is going to be an Astro for a long time. Christian Javier is going to be an Astro for a long time. Amidst a 6-11 start, it is masking some things that have been very positive developments here early. And those two both looking like they did in 2022, especially in the postseason. Javier hasn't been as dominant. Like, Javier was, I mean, look, you could argue he was the best pitcher in baseball for a stretch back in 2022. But he's at least somebody you feel, put it this way, he's in the circle of trust. You know, yeah. Like we haven't done a circle of trust yet this year just because the season's been so sideways so far.
We did a phantom zone.
We did a phantom zone where we ejected all the underperformers into outer space. But if we were to do a circle of trust today, Christian Javier would be in that circle of trust right now.
If you, I just remembered that we're in
the 8-8.
In the 8-8. Just real quick.
Yeah.
If you look at the graphic of like pitch distribution for Christian Javier, where he was, you know, he's thrown way fewer fastballs and way more changeups. That's the one thing that I'm intrigued by with Verlander working on his changeup. Like this staff has all been working on their changeups. That's something that might take a little while to really take root as everybody gets comfortable with it. And yet at the same time, just I wonder how much maybe that helps in the future the Astros get injured less. You're not throwing as much with as much as velocity as much of the time. But for Javier, having that third pitch ready and available to offset the four-seamer, it's been really, really good when it's working.
Been great, no doubt. I'm going to skip over the Rockets here just because we got done talking about them for about 10 minutes in the last segment. But their season's over. They close out with a 116-105 win over the Clippers yesterday. Number two will be the Texans, who are back. Off-season program starts today. D'Amico Ryan, C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, all meeting with the media. I think it's interesting, Seth. Look, I think one of the more interesting stories today will be kind of taking attendance on this whole thing and seeing who's going to be there, seeing if Stephon Diggs is hanging out with his new teammates.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that Will Anderson is one of the three main guys getting trotted out at the very first day of the offseason program. I think it's a subtle hint as to what this organization feels about Will, like that this is D'Amico's the face of the program, CJ's the face of the offense, Will Anderson is the face of the defense now, I think. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's symbolically an interesting thing.
I think part of it, too, is just that Will Anderson's a really good interview.
That, too.
So there's that. That helps. But, yeah, I think symbolically, the number two and the number three overall pick, there's nothing that feels like this is being forced or just, you know, something that's trying to justify what they did. And that, the Will Anderson pick is the one that Caserio would have gotten the most scrutiny for if it hadn't worked out.
Yeah.
If C.J. Stroud hadn't worked out, then it would have just, you know, especially with Bryce Young not having played well either, then people wouldn't have crushed that nearly as much as trading up aggressively for Will Anderson. That was a huge deal, and for so far so good on that front. He's got you're the defensive rookie of the year. And, yeah, to boot, he's a really good interview.
He's a really good interview.
Which is always nice.
That'll be today at noon. I imagine In the Loop will be all over the press conferences of D'Amico, CJ, and Will Anderson.
Three.
Masters yesterday, Scottie Scheffler, who is the he is the championship belt holder of best golfer in the world right now. Wins by four strokes. Never really crumbled or anything. It was dicey early on for Scottie Scheffler, but the back nine was just straight up boring. And I mean that in the ultimate compliment. Nobody made a run at him down the stretch, including Tiger Woods, who didn't make a run at anybody. He was 16 over for the weekend. DFL, man, dead last place in the Masters. Highest score of his career, Tiger Woods, for a 72-hole tournament. And, man, it's crazy to think that 2019 Masters that he won, the further we get from it, is going to look like one of the biggest outlier crazy things to happen in the history of the sport. You know, just hit that one weekend, he hadn't been able to put anything together for 10 years. And then for one weekend, magical weekend in 2019, he wins a Masters, and now here we are 5 years later. And he says it, man. You hear every interview, like he struggles to walk the course for 18 holes every day. You know,
he handed a piece of paper to that little chubby feller there at some point. And, the little chubby feller was asked about it afterwards, and he clammed up and said, "No, never happened."
Oh yeah,
that's a big brewing controversy as people are speculating whether or not Tiger was giving him tips or advice or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't have the mental bandwidth to follow a potential PGA scandal between a washed up golfer and this chubby kid. But Scheffler's wife didn't pop a baby out.
That's the big thing.
That was the other big side. Scheffler's wife, who I don't think is even due Okay, this is the annoying thing about this. I've seen that she's due in the coming weeks. It's not like she was due on Sunday. Scheffler's got to calm the hell down. I know this is your first child, but listen, don't be the annoying first-time parent that's stressed out about every damn thing, Scheffler. All right? Enjoy your damn Masters instead of whining about it afterwards.
And for those who didn't hear earlier, right, he said he would leave the course in the middle of the round if
he would have left with on the 17th hole of the last day if his wife had gone into labor.
No chance.
A little too much drama from you, yep. Scheffler. All right?
Yep.
Four.
We got a signing in the AFC South. While the show's been going on this morning, it's a contract extension for DeForest Buckner. Indianapolis Colts signs a 2-year, $46 million extension, which is the defensive tackle market is going. That's actually a nice team-friendly deal at $23 million a year for DeForest Buckner, who's been one of the best interior defensive linemen in all of football, really since he entered the league, but certainly since he was traded to the Colts back in 2020. They traded...
Yeah.
Traded a first-round pick and then gave him a huge deal. He gets a 2-year, $46 million extension, which makes him a Colt through the 2026 season.
And they had extended Grover Stewart this year, too. So their two defensive tackles are side-by-side, if I'm not mistaken. But those two guys are really, really good. It's one of the better tandems in the league. Grover Stewart is the less heralded guy. But for any of you UT fans who really, really want T'Vondre Sweat to make it in the NFL, Grover Stewart, DeForest Buckner's running mate, offers a good lesson. Grover Stewart was like 346 pounds at the combine and was way too fat. He was like out of Albany State. He ended up getting down to 316. He lost 30 pounds, and he's a really good player now in the NFL. T'Vondre Sweat is just too big. He needs to lose weight. He flat out. I watched more of him this weekend, and now I'm angry about it. I'm just saying he needs to get control of his life. And get control of everything that's distracting him or what have you. This fact that he thinks he can weigh 365 and be just fine. Like, no. He needs to lose at least 20 pounds. And then he could be an absolute stud. So grab him. When you see him, grab him and shake him. And say, listen, fatty, get your damn weight down. You could be awesome.
Seth said so. Yeah.
Five.
Rashee Rice, more news on the Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver and his traffic issues. If you recall... A couple weeks ago, he and Rashee Rice and some friends were speed racing on a Dallas freeway and crashed. Lamborghini and a Corvette crashed into four other cars. Nobody seriously injured in the crash, but the biggest things were A, the racing going on, and B, the fact that Rashee Rice and his friends walked away from the accident. Since then, we know that there's been a story of them finding weed in one of the cars. Now we find out that Rashee Rice was going 119 miles an hour about 4.5 seconds before the crash occurred. The Corvette, which was also in Rashee Rice's name, he was renting the Lamborghini. He owned the Corvette. That was going 116 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So
it's I don't know. I think a lot of people with these things, people are always inclined to like leap to conclusions and think that he's going to miss an entire year for this or what have you. Usually with the vehicular stuff, if nobody gets injured, the NFL gives people a little bit of a slap on the wrist. Roethlisberger, I can't remember how much Roethlisberger got suspended for his motorcycle accident, but like he was the only one that got injured in that back in the day. So I would put the over under at 1.5 on number of games suspended.
Really, I'll go over on that. I'll go 1.5. They never give out just a 1-game suspension, do they?
There was a weird one last year. You're right. So I guess I should probably put it at 2.5.
2.5 is a good one. Right?
It's very out of the ordinary for them to do one game. No. I was thinking of the Deshaun Watson one, which was so weird because remember it was 11 games.
Yeah.
It wasn't a nice even number.
That felt planned. Yeah. Well, what's their 12th game that year? They play the Texans. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, Rashee Rice. He was driving really fast.
Six.
The Ohio State spring game was televised this weekend on Fox. I just find that fascinating. Like that's where we are with the thirst for college football. Like anybody who thinks like, oh, the portal and oh, NIL and oh, the sport's dying. They
Brian
televised.
Kelly is calling for a salary cap on something that supposedly the teams don't control anyway.
Right.
Supposedly, yeah.
They televised the Ohio State spring game on Fox, to which I use that as a reminder to one William O'Brien. He could have been calling plays at the Ohio State spring game. Instead, he was carnival barking on the quad at Boston College. And I went and saw some of the footage from the Boston College spring game.
Yeah.
Not a big crowd. Not a big crowd.
I don't know, do you think, is there a chance that O'Brien has basically said, you know what? No, that's, this is where I'm staking my claim. I just want to be a head coach of a nice college.
Yes.
For the rest of my career. You think so?
Yes. And especially considering where it is geographically, it's in Boston.
Close to his home.
Where he's from.
Yeah.
I do think that. And I think he's at a school where if he wins 8 games every year, he can be the coach there for the next 20 years. He can make $4 million, whatever he's making a year. For, you know, till he's 70 if he wants to, if he wins 8 games a year at Boston College.
I remember there was a Yale had a head coach from like the 1965 through 1998 or something, Carm Cosa.
Yeah, I remember him.
I think he was just super, like, loved coaching at a college, like at a non-marquee. Now, back in the 60s, Yale would actually compete for some pretty notable games and what have you, you know. Somewhere along the way, he decided, like, nope, I'm just like, I like being here. This is my spot. I don't need to jump. Like, as that league lost relevance, he didn't need to jump to somewhere else.
Seven.
I've got something with O.J. Simpson that I want to get to. I'm going to save for later in the show. But the news item with O.J. this week is that apparently, Seth, according to People magazine, he died more than $100 million in debt to the Goldman family.
Yeah.
Paid a total, and we all know this, O.J. was acquitted of murder in a criminal court. He was found liable for the 2 murders in a civil court and was ordered to pay retribution of $33.5 million to the families that were affected by the 2 killings. He paid, during the course of the remainder of his lifetime, $133,000 to the Goldmans. The Goldmans got some proceeds from the book, If I Did It, which has to be the most painful. Like, I wouldn't even want the money at that point, you know? Like, it's so tacky.
You know what? It's weird. We were talking about this last week about just, you know, how will history remember the O.J. saga and what have you. I don't know if it actually will be something that's remembered 70, 80, 90 years from now, because I think it's almost impossible to explain just how weird a scenario it was for so long.
Maybe.
That for the course of multiple decades, most of the American public felt like, oh yeah, this dude totally did it, and yet he's walking around free. And that, like, we would hang like the civil judgment almost as if it was the same as a criminal judgment. You know, like, was he guilty? Well, no, but he was found liable. And which I 100% am one of those people. 100% one of those people. But he was out playing golf and doing posts on X.com and all of this. It's just weird.
With really interest, weird. With interest, they put the amount at $114 million that they owed O.J. That O.J. owed the Goldman.
Yeah, he basically never really paid any of it at all. He just walked around playing golf and doing whatever.
Yep.
And supposedly searching for the true killer.
Searching, and he never successful in finding them. It's weird.
Yeah.
All right, we don't have time to get to this one. I had a nice reality TV topic. Maybe I'll save it for later in the show. But go figure, the show The Golden Bachelor, the Bachelor show they did with that 70-plus-year-old guy courting a bunch of ilfs. The marriage didn't work out. 3 months divorced.
How long was that? 3 months?
Three months.
So they got married at the end of it, and then they were married for 3 months.
Three months.
Now they're done, huh?
Divorced, yeah. The audio of a sit-down interview they did is outstanding that I want to get to. I'll get to it a little later.
Was there acrimony?
No. Outwardly there was not. No.
I got to imagine once you get to Golden Bachelor age, right, if you marry somebody when you're in your 70s, and it doesn't work out, both of you are kind of like, yeah, whatever.
On to the next.
Yeah, we're going to waste our time with this. Good knowing you. See you later.
It is probably a lot more liberating at age 70.
Yeah.
So we may get to that a little later on in the show. But that was the 8 at 8 o'clock. Hey, Jimmy Ward, Aaron Wilson of Channel 2 caught up with Jimmy Ward. Anytime there's Jimmy Ward audio, the Jimmy Ward audio will get played. Jimmy Ward on the Stephon Diggs trade. And the deal to sell number one to Stephon Diggs. We will talk about that coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Jimmy Ward, Aaron Wilson caught up with Jimmy Ward, Texan safety, and asked him about the Stephon Diggs trade. Here is Texan safety Jimmy Ward on his new teammate.
Oh, man, it's going to be pretty cool. You know, he's great talent. Came in his lead, did what he's supposed to do, and I feel like Nico and Nick did a great job by going to get him, making that trade, and I feel like he's going to make our team better.
I did start thinking, Seth, in Jimmy Ward always gets his look in his eye when he gets asked questions. Like
he's got a mischievous look.
He does. Yeah. And he's getting asked about Stephon Diggs, and as Aaron's asking the question, he starts to get a smirk on his face. And my biggest takeaway from Jimmy Ward's first year so far, my biggest memory of Jimmy Ward from his 1 year, because he missed some time. Unfortunately, yeah. Injuries are a memory. The interception against Denver, for sure. But the big one for me was how intense he was during practice at training camp. Remember?
Asked
Dalton Schultz, going over the middle. I'm actually getting excited for maybe a little Stephon Diggs Jimmy Ward action in training camp going on.
Jimmy Ward is on the teaching tape for the hip drop tackle. Jimmy Ward is maimed and injured multiple NFL players with a lust for violence that I think is admirable. And he has to be careful on, staying just this side of the right. By the way, that guy that I'm describing to you, Aaron interviewed him as Jimmy was releasing his children's book, Jimmy Ward's Nutritional ABCs.
Yeah.
So this is a... He maims people, but he's also a children's book writer.
He is. There's many
sides.
And
it all makes sense. He's got an electric personality.
Yes.
So you're saying he got that look in his eyes about Stephon Diggs?
A little bit, when he was asked about the trade, and yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
He was I wonder, Jimmy feels like a guy that can maybe have frank and honest conversations with people, though, too. So that if Steph Diggs was upset about something, Jimmy might be the very guy you want to go talk to him. Not to tell him, hey, knock it off or anything, but just to let Stephon Diggs be heard. Bill's teammates have said that sometimes Steph just needs to be heard. So a guy like Jimmy Ward can probably have a good conversation with Steph Diggs and maybe, sometimes calm things down.
I think it's a really good point. I think you're actually right about that. Ward is more, you think of who the captains of the team are, it's a lot of young guys and Jimmy Ward. It's Jalen Petrie, it's CJ Stroud, it's Laremy Tunsil also, but I think Jimmy Ward feels more like the guy you'd send over to talk to Steph than Laremy, probably, I would think. I think it's a good point. We'll see. We'll see how it goes getting Diggs ingratiated into the locker room.
Are you going to read his book?
The children's book? Yes. Jimmy Ward's children's book? Why? Do I look like I need nutritional tips? What are you trying to say?
No, it's for active kids.
Oh.
Sean, that's not nutritional tips for sitting at the bar in the afternoon.
Dude, clear liquor as opposed to darker liquor. Yeah.
Jimmy Ward's, that's going to be his next book. Jimmy Ward's tips for middle-aged dudes who have come to a certain understanding of the reality.
Dude, that should be my
situation.
Book. I've managed to actually maintain pretty well, still living a lifestyle.
You're pretty active, too.
Yeah. No, I work out every day, man. I work out, and then I go cancel it out right after that. To answer your question, I probably will read it because that's the extent of the books I read today. Children's book, yes, right up my alley. Tons of pictures, very few words. I'm in.
I'm sitting here. I'm looking on the Amazon trying to figure out whether I'll send you the paperback or the hardcover. Big price difference.
Kindle.
They don't have a Kindle version that I see.
Yeah.
They've got $16 for the paperback, $24 for the hardcover.
Oh, you don't have to do the hardcover. Paperback's fine. Paperback's okay, good. Right, okay. Jimmy Ward.
Hardcover makes it look fancier, though. You got the hardcover book up on your bookshelf behind
on the
you.
Bookshelf or on the coffee table right there. It's very impressive. Yeah. Wow, Sean, is that a kids' nutrition book you have on the coffee table right there? Why, yes.
Do you have grandkids? No. Just waiting for kids to show up.
Okay. On to the next. Jimmy Ward has already done some business with Stephon Diggs. As we know, Jimmy Ward, if you're looking for jersey number one this year, that is going to be on Stephon Diggs. Jimmy Ward is now number 20. How about that jersey deal you did with Stephon Diggs, Jimmy Ward?
We worked some things out. I feel like he's happy, and 20 was available, so I'm happy. It's a number that I feel like I can make plays in. Well, I feel like I can make plays in anything, but you know what they say. I think Deion said it the best. You look good.
Feel good, play good?
No, feel good. Hold on. Is it look good, feel good, play good?
Yeah, I think
look,
that is.
Look good, feel good, play good.
Number
Deion
20
said that. Is that what he said?
No, Deion.
Oh, Deion. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Beyonce too, probably.
I know. Yeah, I don't think Deion came up with it or anything.
Yeah,
I thought maybe Beyonce had a song lyric or something.
Maybe.
That's where you understand what a real Renaissance man he is. He's a man known for his violence on the football field, but he also writes children's books and quotes Beyonce.
Beyonce lyrics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is 20 a good number? Is that a good playmaker's number? 20, that's what Jimmy Ward's going to be wearing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about notable 20s in NFL history.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Natron Means 20? That's good enough for me. Natron Means business.
Big-ass Natron Means?
I don't know if you know of Natron Means. Yeah, Natron Means was 20. I don't know how I pulled that out of my wallet.
Yeah, dude.
I'm not a numbers guy. I don't know where Natron Means came from in my history of people who play.
I don't know how your brain works, man. I give up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. Is it that hard to manage and deal with? I apologize.
No, it's not.
Sorry, you didn't want Natron Means in your life.
No, I apologize. It's not hard at all to deal with. It's amazing. It's amazing. Oh wow, that's funny. So there's your Jimmy Ward. Did you see the latest player to use the new anti-love language of the NFL, unfollowing their team on social media?
Is this Brandon Ayuk?
Brandon Ayuk, yeah.
Brandon Ayuk unfollows. Well, you know what? I mean, this is – I can't blame him because Deebo Samuel kind of did a lot of the same stuff, did he not? Deebo Samuel went through that entire offseason and training camp have you, just making a stink about stuff, and lo and behold, he ended up getting his contract. And Brandon Ayuk has really taken the mantle from Deebo Samuel and being a more valuable receiver. Mm-hmm. Deebo's very valuable in terms of his ability to do everything and line up in the backfield and all of that. But Brandon Ayuk is more of the go-to guy at receiver. And I think he gets his deal. I think, like, one of the very reasons that the 49ers said goodbye to Eric Armstead and some of the other deals they've had to do to manage their cap situation, it's so they can sign Brandon Ayuk. I'd be really, really surprised if they let him go.
Yeah, I would too. The rumor mill had the Steelers, the Ravens, and a third, quote, mystery team. Ooh. Yeah, I know. I love the mystery team.
How are Ravens going to do it?
Yeah, I don't know. The Steelers, Ravens, and a mystery team in on Ayuk for trade, but then Ayuk's agent retweeted that rumor and was like, well, you need better sources.
Okay.
Yeah, so the agent, at least outwardly, is downplaying any sort of demand for a trade.
John Frisella had tweeted, Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the 49ers per confirmation from my San Francisco source. And Ryan Williams said, you need better sources.
Yep.
Yeah, the original report was, as of Sunday morning, the Steelers have been the most aggressive in pursuing a trade for Ayuk, with the Ravens also expressing interest.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many crap reports out there from random Twitter users.
Dude, I can't. Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. You have to double check everything these days. It really does suck. Now, I will say this. If the Texans had not made the Diggs trade,
right,
you and I would be discussing the likelihood that they are the third mystery team on Brandon Ayuk this morning, probably.
Yeah.
But there's zero chance they are now, but yeah.
I wonder, there might also, you never know, there could be like a corresponding, I don't know. Maybe a Deebo Samuel trade is actually the surprise move that ends up happening at some point.
Ooh.
Where they keep Ayuk, but they trade away Samuel.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. We're getting a lot of people texting in. Ed Reed was number 20 back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Texans legend,
you know
Ed Reed.
What? Man,
how
did
you forget
glad.
All those plays that he made for the Texans?
That's right.
Seth?
I'm glad that I remembered Natron Means before I remembered Ed Reed. Natron Means, not yet in the Hall of Fame, over Hall of Famer Ed Reed. Yes, I'll take my Natron Means business.
And Hall of Famer Barry Sanders, number 20 as well, a few people point out. How you pulled Natron
Doesn't have
Means.
As punnable a name.
Yeah.
You got to have a punnable name if
it's
you want to live in the Hall of Seth.
Yep.
That's right.
Hall of Seth. Quite the hall it is. So, yeah, Ed Reed and Barry, yeah, Barry Sanders. Brian Dawkins, number 20 as well. All right, Brian Dawkins has a relative listening to the show. So there you go.
Well, Brian Dawkins was a bigger name than Natron Means, too.
For
a longer amount of time.
I think Dawkins is a Hall of Famer, too, if I'm not mistaken. I think he made it in recent years. I think Brian Dawkins made the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. Someone says Justin Reed. Now, I saw a free agency list for next year where Justin Reed is like the eighth best free agent that's going to be on the market. Like, Justin Reed's had a really, really nice run in Kansas City these last few years. He's been really, really
good. Yeah, he has. Yeah.
He's been really, really good.
The other thing, when it comes to potential players changing teams or what have you,
yeah.
Like Tom Brady, I guess, would tie. If Tom Brady were to play this year, does Tampa still have the rights to? They still have his rights, do they not?
I think he was on a one-year deal.
Okay, all right. So he's technically a free agent.
Yeah.
And we all know that we talked about this. Did we talk about this last week? When he was on the podcast,
we
played the audio,
yeah.
Of him when he was on the
Big Shot podcast. Yeah,
what was it?
The Big Shot, something like that.
No, it wasn't the Big Shot. It was
whatever it was. Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, yeah. It's a guy whose kid's name is Les Vic Blends. Vic Blends podcast. He said that he wasn't opposed to coming back under the right situation. So now we have odds on exactly who the team would be. The Raiders are the favorites in the clubhouse, followed by the Patriots.
Yes.
Both of them make sense. I went back and I listened to this Vic Blends podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He's a barber. He's like a 25-year-old barber who has people, you know, that he interviews while he's cutting their hair.
Yeah.
He's a Patriots fan growing up. I listened to the entire podcast, or I watched it on YouTube. It was an hour and 5 minutes long, give or take. And in the 65th minute, the very last question of the podcast,
that one?
He asked, would you think about coming back? And that's when Brady said that he wouldn't rule it out. I've got two theories. One is either that, A, he had just gotten his hair cut, and sometimes you're a little loose and open at the end of a podcast, and you say, yeah, anything could happen. Or I'd say three options. B, he might actually be considering it. Or C, he was just trying to put this kid over. Because it's not like it's a huge, huge, huge podcast.
Deep Cut podcast.
The Deep Cut podcast.
Deep, that makes
Vic
sense
Blends.
For the barbershop.
Right, yeah.
Deep Cut, yeah.
But that he was just trying to put this kid over. But I think there's a 65% chance Brady comes back and plays.
We may have to go back and listen to it then with that new context around it and see if we feel differently about it. We'll maybe do that a little later on in the show. But the Raiders are the favorite, plus 125. A team that Tom Brady does not have an ownership interest in yet.
Well, yeah, that's one of the biggest obstacles that would be is if they do grant him ownership, then wait a second, can you play for a team other than, there's all kinds of legal maneuvering that might bar it.
Mel Kiper and Field Yates did a three-round mock draft with each other. We've canceled Mel Kiper, but Field Yates is knocking at the door of the Payne and Pendergast mock draft season and said, hey, can I get my friend Mel in here? I know you guys canceled him. Fine, Field, if he's with you, we will see who the two of you have the Texans taking with the 42nd overall pick coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Really is interesting, Seth. It looks like practically every mock draft that I see, and we're only 10 days out from the draft. It'll be a week from Thursday. You'll be able to hear all of it throughout the weekend on Sports Radio 610. Seth will be on the day two coverage for the Texans, which is... that's the day where things are going to be popping. 2 second-round picks and a third-round pick. As of right now, I'll be on day three with John Harris. But it looks like a lot of the experts out there are assuming that there is going to be a trade-up from somebody whether it's the Raiders or the Vikings or somebody, to move up and take another quarterback. It looks like we may have four quarterbacks go in the top five picks in this draft.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
And most of them are going to suck. And then Caleb Williams might end up being despised by Chicago because they don't want anybody that – somehow the city that in which one of their very best quarterbacks was a not-so-great quarterback in Jim McMahon, who had more personality than actual playing ability, somehow they're too good for Caleb Williams' personality. So, yeah, good luck hating yourself forever, Chicago. Mm-hmm. My God. Mm-hmm. You just could you not have to have everything absolutely perfect all the time, all right?
I'm excited to see.
They're going to run that poor kid out of town.
Yeah.
Because he likes to paint his fingernails. My God.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Caleb Williams fan if they run him out of town. It's not because of the fingernails. It's just I'm not a big fan. I think he's a little overrated. I was going back and reading some stuff from a year ago, including an article that basically implored, wondering, you know, why all the teams at the top of the 2023 draft shouldn't just wait and see if they could get Caleb Williams the next year.
Right,
those are fun to go back and read, especially as a Houstonian.
There's a pettiness that you want to be able to exercise there. Like, you'd love to just be able to go back and say, oh, yeah, I remember when they were... But it's also, that's one you want to keep in the holster, too, to remember. Look, all right, it's not always the same as, you know, like, kind of like Matt Barkley. Remember when Matt Barkley was going to be the number one overall pick and it was a slam dunk go-to, obviously? Like, yeah, it doesn't always work out that way that kid's either A, going to be the number one overall pick, or B, that he's going to be any good.
Yep. So Field Yates and Mel Kiper Jr. did a sort of a dueling pianos kind of mock draft. You know, Kiper would go and then Yates would go and back and forth and back and forth. Mel Kiper has been canceled individually from our mock draft process because he had the Texans early in mock draft season taking an offensive tackle and ignoring and not even mentioning the fact that Titus Howard is the right tackle and has been signed to be the right tackle of this football team. That gets you canceled on Payne and Pendergast. Thank you, Ben.
Yep.
However, Field Yates figuratively walked up to the door here of our club Payne and Pendergast, and said, hey, I know you guys canceled Mel, but what if you know me, Field Yates, can he come in with me? I'll vouch for him. I promise he's not going to do anything stupid in this mock draft. And to which we say, Field, you're vouching for him now. If he does something stupid, if he picks a tackle with one of his picks for the Texans without mentioning Titus Howard, it's on you. You're going to get canceled too. And Field Yates says, fine, I trust Mel. So we page down to the 42nd overall pick in this ESPN.com old mockaroo. And the Houston Texans, with the 42nd overall pick, select Mason Smith, defensive tackle, LSU.
Yeah.
This is Yates making this pick, by the way, not Mel Kiper Jr.
Without looking at which other defensive tackles were available, there's parts of Mason Smith that make sense almost just from a body type perspective. If you think about like Eric Armstead or DeForest Buckner or some of these guys, they're taller, longer, big dudes, but not gargantuan Jordan Davis types, certainly not a Devondre Sweat. So they're not heavy, but they're big. And Mason Smith is like that. He hasn't necessarily shown the production or the consistency where for how big and physical he looks like he could be. He doesn't necessarily hold up to double teams all that well and everything. So there's a little bit of projection there with Mason Smith, and yet there's a lot to be intrigued by. I'd be surprised, though, honestly, if that's who they took that high.
Yes.
I think that Mason Smith might end up going a bit lower than 43.
It's the highest I've seen him going in any of these.
Yeah.
Because I like him as a player. I watched a lot of him at LSU, and he got injured 2 years ago in the opening game against Florida State. He tore his ACL. Johnny Newton is still on the board at 42 in this one. If you had your choice, if you're in the war room and they said, Seth, it's down to these two defensive tackles. You played defensive tackle in the league. We're going to let you make this pick. It sounds like you would take Johnny Newton.
I would have taken Johnny Newton. Yeah. I think Johnny Newton has got I think just honestly his football instincts / football IQ are really, really good. He's just got a very good awareness about him. He's got an explosivity about him that a lot of these other guys don't get. And, I guess if Newton were still available there, Let's see. What do they say? When he ends up going 49th, Kuiper picks him to go to the Bengals, and he says, I'm a little lower on Newton than a few NFL teams that think he will go in round one, but this feels like a solid fit and value for the Bengals, whose front seven had a tough 2023. So, and that's kind of the defensive tackle class this year. Even Byron Murphy, who's, I think, consensus considered the best, people aren't like over the moon for him. He's not the perfect defensive tackle prospect. He's the best in this class.
He goes 16th to the Seahawks in this particular one. You want to play the game here at 59 too and see who they got the Texans
Give
taking?
It to me.
This would be a Kuiper pick at 40. No, it's not 40. As I say 49, I meant 59. 59, the 59th pick in the Field Yates, Mel Kuiper, Mockaroo. Mel Kuiper has him taking Kamari Lassiter, cornerback from Georgia. Lassiter doesn't have elite speed, but he's a really solid corner. Texans ranked 29th in the league in yards per pass attempt allowed last season, 7.7.
Dear God.
Yeah,
they were awful. The play action and the chunk plays really took it out of them. Yep. Remember, especially, when you're going up against Zach Wilson or a Kenny Pickett.
It's true.
Or whomever else like that.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson especially really torched them on a yards per attempt.
Will Levis, my friend.
Well, at least they did well against Will Levis.
I know.
So, it's the Zach Wilsons of the world that had awesome games that were really frustrating. You know what? The only thing that makes me nervous about Lassiter is what makes me nervous about any Georgia defender. It's that it's really hard to judge how good a guy is when they're playing on an awesome defense.
Yeah.
You know, it really, really is. And so with Lassiter, he does things really well. He's got a really good football IQ. He's tough as hell. I don't know if he's that athletic. You know, when the concerns are about his ability to, there's concerns about his ability to recover on deep balls, et cetera, stuff like that. There's two sides you could go with that. One is like, my God, and you don't have to do it that often on that Georgia defense. The other side is like, oh, yeah, you don't have to do it that often. They're more concerned with other stuff, with people just struggling to not get suffocated by your defense. So I'd be intrigued and as excited as you can get about a 59th overall pick. I think that would be a vote by D'Amico and Casario for toughness and pedigree more so than anything else.
The solution that you have proposed at times on this show to rebuild the interior of the defensive line is use them both. Use 42 and 59 on interior defensive linemen. I will tell you, in this particular mock, Braden Fisk still on the board at 59.
Oh, wow.
He
really
ends up going 64th to the Kansas City Chiefs.
What do they say about him there?
He says Kansas City spent big to retain Chris Jones, and Fisk would make the interior even better. He's very disruptive and plays with explosiveness.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these guys are really, I wonder, man.
They are down on this interior D-line class.
Really are. Yeah, yeah. Tavondre Sweat doesn't go in this draft at all.
Wow.
The only Sweat that shows up is Montez Sweat when they're talking about the Commanders picking an edge rusher after, trading away Montez Sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Draft 10 days away. We got you covered here on Sports Radio 610 for all three nights. Even though the Texans don't have a pick in the first round, Texans Radio's got you covered on that first night of the draft. That's the John Harris weekend. He's a machine. He is a machine that weekend. Three straight days, you get Johnny Harris, the best in the business.
John told us that he was cursing us out previously this year over a pronunciation of a player that ends up, he says he was, I don't want to say which player it was, but then he realized that he was actually wrong about it. And I didn't even know that he was cursing us out. He said he would do it while he was riding in his car, listening to us on the radio.
I heard him say that name one time, and I'm like, oh, crap, we've been pronouncing it wrong.
Wrong.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. All right. The Astros seem to be pretty optimistic about the direction they're going. I don't think they're out of the woods on this slow start yet, though, even though some of them sure sounded that way on Sunday. What has gone sideways with this team so far, and how much does it affect our view that they could make an eighth straight ALCS? How fixable are these problems? We will discuss that coming up next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.